This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today's guest is Carson Tate. Carson is the founding manager of Working Simply. She helps build personal and professional legacies, and she also helps leaders and employees to enhance workplace productivity and foster employee engagement. She is a best-selling author with her book called Own It, Love It, and Make It Work. Carson is just a real delight to talk to. She really understands what employees are interested in, how they get engaged, why they burn out. Just has a real a wealth of knowledge, and it was really fun talking with her. So in the discussion today, you'll hear us talk about the Sunday night scaries and the Monday morning blues and some of the things that people go through when they aren't in the right place for their career, or maybe they're just really struggling and trying to define and know what their purpose is. So let's just jump right into the discussion with Carson, and here we go. Carson, welcome to the program. It's great to have you today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So now you're the founder and managing partner of Working Simply. So tell us a little bit about what that is and what the goals of that company is.
Yes, so we are a company, and we work with executives, teams, and entire divisions and organizations to help them improve their productivity, optimize team performance, and amplify their leadership. So we do training, consulting, and executive coaching work with our clients.
That's great. Now, how long have you been doing that?
A long time, over 10 years.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, you're helping leaders, employees to enhance, you said, workplace productivity, you know, foster employee engagement. You know, tell me what that means. I think a lot of times in today's world, a little bit of that, you know, productivity kind of has a negative connotation. So what do you mean by productivity, and what are you trying to do there?
So by productivity, fundamentally, we want to equip and empower our clients to work smarter, not harder, to reorient from that output. Let's just do more, throw more hours, wasted meetings, inefficient processes, to that impactful work that adds value, but is also creates, this is the connection with engagement, creates that fulfillment and engagement of the team members.
Okay. And then by doing that, what do you think that most people, what do they get bogged down in? What do they struggle with when you come in and look to help them do that?
So on the productivity side, people get bogged down in their inboxes. They get bogged down in their calendars being double or triple booked for meetings, bogged down in projects and tasks that may or may not actually drive revenue and help the company achieve its strategic goals.
And so I also read a little bit about how you help build personal and professional legacies. So tell us what that means to you and what are people looking for in that area?
That work typically occurs in our executive coaching engagements, and that is helping our clients identify what is the impact and the legacy you want to have in this organization, or if it's a very senior leader who maybe is looking at the end of their career, what is that legacy when you leave that you want to leave behind? That's all personally defined. It's defined in terms of their values, their capabilities, and the organization in which they're leading.
And do you think most high-level executives like that? Is that something front and center on their mind, or is it something that some really don't think about it until maybe it's too late?
I think it's oftentimes our experience is it tends to be more the latter. However, what we are seeing more and more of is an existential crisis among our clients. fueled in a large part by a global pandemic and a complete and total reorientation to how we work.
Yeah, how do you help advise people on that? I mean, I know that there's all individual situations and circumstances, but just in generally, what have you been doing over the last 20 months to try and help people get through this?
And it hasn't been easy for any of us. We were joking, I'll answer your question. We were joking internally, my team and I, we've always been a virtual team. My team is scattered all over the United States, and we were very effective, very productive, very connected in terms of a team. And then at the start of the pandemic, when everyone in our families and partners and everyone came home, we realized this virtual work can be very difficult when you have other people. So initially we started helping our clients around how can you be more productive in a work environment? How do you communicate well with the technology? And now as people are looking at why and how am I doing this work, just asking that question from a coaching perspective gives us a door in to say, what prompted the reflection? What's coming up as you think about it? What do you want that's different? What have you gained during this global pandemic that you want to carry with you, carry forward? What did you lose in the work from home, if that was your situation, that you want to bring back to your office, either every day or in a hybrid setting?
Yeah, it's interesting because in a lot of the leaders and clients that I've talked with, some of them have almost said that kind of a silver lining issue is that they feel like they've actually learned to communicate better. So probably because they've had to communicate better. So do you see that in your clients as well?
Yes, there's some intentionality. And I think the other piece is this authenticity and vulnerability. So I was on a call with a prospective client and all of a sudden he asked if I had a daughter. I was like, yes. I was a little creeped out. We were on a Zoom call. It's like, mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, she's behind you doing bunny ears.
Great.
Right. I mean, at that point, I'm like, oh, great. Well, yes, I have a 10-year-old and this welcome to my work world.
Yeah.
Which was, we laughed. He was very gracious, but there was, authenticity in that. And a deeper level of conversation was had after that than up until that point.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, there's been some great Zoom bombers for sure.
I love that term, Zoom bombers. I've had my share of Zoom bombers, both my four-legged office mates as well as my child, my daughter.
Yeah, well, we're bringing home to the business world, so that could be good in some ways. Now, you're a best-selling author as well with a book called Own It, Love It, Make It Work. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of that and what message you're trying to get out with writing that book.
So that book is about creating a work life for yourself that brings you personal and professional fulfillment, where you find that engagement, that purpose, that meaning in your work. And what led me to this book is, as I looked at the arc of our client's journey, I would say, once we had dealt with the overwhelm and the stress and pieces and parts of burnout and just ineffectiveness on all facets of their leadership, their team, and but personally, what came next was the why of work. And the why of work is about your engagement and connection to it, which led me to this book. And as I started digging into the engagement statistics around employee engagement, what I was struck by is that the percentage of the U.S. workforce that's engaged is very low, less than 36%, according to Gallup. And over the years, there have been multiple books and podcasts and training programs to try to move this needle. And it's only moved a couple of percentage points, because the bulk of the training and coaching and books and articles, podcasts are directed towards leaders, managers. They absolutely have a key part in engagement, but they don't own the entire engagement equation. And so I wanted to address the employee's piece of the engagement puzzle. And how do we look at employee engagement through the lens of a social contract or social exchange theory? It's about give and take, where both parties have an equal voice in co-creating a workplace that enables all people to thrive, the company to achieve its goals, as well as the individual contributors.
It just seems like burnout is just like at an epidemic level, and it seems like it's more and more than before. So what's different now than was different 10 years ago in relation to burnout and trying to find that balance between work and life and fulfillment?
The, to me, most obvious answer is that the lines between work and life in the pandemic completely blurred. So there was no physical separation any longer for many, many folks between my work and my personal life. So I could be heating up dinner and still be on a work call. It was never ending. And in addition to that, the demands, the personal demands that many folks experienced in terms of childcare, caring for parents, having more people in their homes, the shutdown of a lot of our social support systems, it creates a lot of stress and strain on individuals.
And do you think that that's going to be the new normal going forward? Or are we going to go back to more of you know, the boundaries that you said were before? Because it seems to me like if that's causing so much stress, you know, are we going to get better at dealing with that? Or is this just the something we have to learn new and different?
Well, obviously my hope is that we get better at it. And I do see leaders, teams, and organizations that are adapting. I was on a call earlier today with a fintech company, and Fridays are meeting free. So they don't take any meetings. They have very clear times after which they do not meet as teams to start to create some distinctions between the start and stop of end day. We have teams that have established working agreements around email response times. Our global companies that we work with are very thoughtfully starting to schedule meetings only two nights, still a lot, sometimes three nights a week to give their teams a break. So at the realization that it's very difficult to continue doing work this way, leaders are seeing, and they're starting to make some impactful changes. But it's not just the company. So it's also up to me as a team member and a contributor to be looking for ways for me to create really distinct margins in my day and find time for rest and recovery.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think of being in that situation. You know, I know there's a fear of it, but has it actually happened that, you know, I might limit my career movement if I give boundaries and if I'm not accessible at the drop of a dime and if I'm not willing to do the extras and so on and you know, worried about painting a picture that I'm not a team player because I'm trying to protect, you know, my time. You know, I can see that being a dilemma if you have big dreams and goals to grow in this company and in your profession.
Absolutely. And I would challenge and say, is that true? Or is that an assumption or story that you're telling yourself? And how might you check expectations that your manager, your colleagues, your team members have so that you can have conversations and create working agreements that support all of you?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too that, you know, it seems like a lot of new professionals that I run into, you know, come out with a lot of passion and excitement and want to change the world and do great things. And, you know, about 3 to 5 to maybe 7 years in, they're just like, oh my gosh, this isn't what I'd hoped for. So, Are expectations unrealistic, or are the new generations looking for something different? What's the conflict area there?
Well, I don't know if expectations are unrealistic. this is where I would suggest, and this is one of the key points in my new book, Own It, Love It, Make It Work, is what do you want and need to reconnect to that passion and fulfillment? And have you gotten clear on what that is? And then are you willing to have conversations and take action steps to create a work environment that's fulfilling and engaging, or reignite that passion that was so prevalent early in your career?
Yeah, I think it's a dilemma, and it's just something that a lot of people go through. You know, some people just come out of the gates and they find that great job, and they just grow, and they're enthusiastic and they're fulfilled, so to speak. And others skid. So, you know, if someone's in that dilemma, what advice do you give people like that? How do they get out of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's hard to be there, right? It's uncomfortable. You don't want to have the Sunday night scaries, dreading Monday morning. You don't want to count down the minutes till you log off. That is, most people do not want to work that way. So what I would say on a very tactical, practical level, let's look and gain some insights into the areas of your work that are and are not working for you. And so the easiest way we coach our clients to do this is to look at their calendar and their task list and do a very quick thumbs up or thumbs down. So you look at this meeting, is it energizing, interesting, engaging, thumbs up, thumbs down. And then you go back through this quick reflection, and can we find themes? Oh, you know what? It is engaging when I work with this team because we're solving challenges, or this is engaging because I'm talking to our customers. And once we can start to identify the areas that aren't working and the areas that are working for you, because in all jobs, even the ones that are just miserable, usually there's one glimmer of hope still left there. There's a little something that we can work towards or work from. We can start to do more of it. So let's say, for example, where you're still connected and passionate and engaged is when you get to work with customers. But you realize when you started your job 7 years ago, that was 75% of your work, but you've advanced in the company and now you're a leader managing a team of 10, and it's only 5% of your workday. Okay. Mm-hmm. How do we look for opportunities to get more of that connection with your customers? What might that look like? How do we get creative? How could you go on customer calls or sit on calls with your team members and use this as a developmental opportunity for them and a connection point for you? The other piece of this exercise, that if you do decide that this job, this company is not right and you want to quit and get a new job, this information is very helpful as you start to think about, what do I want and need in that new position?
Yeah, it's tell us a little bit about your journey. So how did you get into in this coaching role, and did you create your dream job or did you just fall into it? Was it intentional? I'm interested.
So I started my career in financial services and human resources. So always enjoyed people, and I had the opportunity to start out in training and communications and work with exceptional folks. I left that job because I wanted to get some sales experience and went into outside sales, and I loved that. And that's where I experienced the entrepreneurial itch, because when I started in the sales role, they gave me a car, a phone, and a credit card and told me to go build a market. I had never had that freedom nor that fear. Like, I was like, what? But it was exhilarating. And in that job, I realized that two of my areas I was pretty good at, competencies that I had, was the productivity. I was organized, could build systems and processes that made it really easy for me to do my sales job. And I was a good communicator. And my colleagues started asking me for tips around processes and working with our clients, and I started giving them tips. And that's where I realized, one, I can help people, and two, this is really fun. How do I do more of it? And so I started my own company built around those two pieces, that coaching, helping training and productivity, communication, working well with others. I've had a couple of bad jobs along the way that helped me really realize that there are pieces in any job that can be redeemed, and you've got to do some work at times to identify what those are.
You know, hearing your story, it makes me also think too, it's, you know, you took some risk, and I'm wondering sometimes if people that are stuck in the rut are just afraid to risk something, to take that leap forward and do something different, or feel that they can't, and that's what keeps them in jobs that they don't like.
Absolutely. I mean, it changes hard. It's scary. When I resigned from my sales job, I resigned to my manager, who I absolutely adored. He was an exceptional leader, great manager, learned so much from him. And he told me, "Carson, I'm not going to accept your resignation." I'm like, "Wait, what?" Yeah. I was like, "What do you mean?" You know, I had the letter, I was all ready. And he's like, "No, you're going to have to resign to the VP of sales." I'm like, "Excuse me?" He's like, "Yes, you're going to have to call and you're going to have to resign to him because I'm not accepting your resignation." So, okay, so I call up the VP of sales and tell him, like, I'm really excited about starting my own job, my company, work, and I'm resigning. And he's like, "Well, okay. And you know that you always have an opportunity here," which is great. That's that risk piece. And then he ended the call by asking me, "Well, do you think you can actually do this?" It's like, "Well, I really appreciate it, Mr. VP, for that extra push that I needed to go get it." Yeah. And what I would say for folks, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. So is there a small step that you could take? So let's say, for example, you're in a job that just is kind of blah, just really not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. What's one small thing that you could do that's really low risk that might create an opportunity for a little bit more engagement? So it could be as simple as you realize, you know, it's always really fun when I work with fill in the blank. I'm wondering if there's an opportunity for us to both volunteer for this committee in the company, or for us to partner on a project. That's a pretty low risk way to start to create something different at work.
So maybe just start by taking some baby steps and do little things, as opposed to jumping off the cliff and throwing it all at one thing.
Absolutely, because I certainly didn't resign from my corporate sales job without having built a business plan, tested it, you know, worked on the weekends, tried the concept out. So, you know, the little tiny steps along the way that you can take to mitigate risk and dial down the fear.
And how were those early years? Did you have some doubt? Were there some sleepless nights?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, is this going to work? Did you earn the right to come back? You know, did the work stick? Did you help people change?" All of that.
Yeah. You know, and you look at building a business and owning a business as you are and going forward, how do you find time to take out of that day-to-day work and write a book? Did you have to be very disciplined about it, or is that the weekend and nights thing?
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Let's just say that. It was, I am a morning person, so very early mornings, I would get up very, very early and do chunks of writing. And then it was weekends and I would edit, you know, late afternoons. I'm not great at night, so I would have to go very early in the mornings. I have a new appreciation for morning show anchors and what time they get up.
that's always perplexed me. I don't know if I could take a job where you had to get up at 3 a.m. So
I know that I could not do that on a consistent basis.
Yeah. So if someone's in a bigger company that has some bureaucracy or just pure size, how do you get recognized and appreciated for what you do and who you are and kind of moving up that ladder?
Mm-hmm. So it starts with your manager. So the way that I've found with our clients is the most impactful to get that recognition is to connect that recognition to you wanting to continue to develop in your career and achieve the goals of your team or the company's goals. So for example, let's say I want to be promoted to a VP, and I know that in my organization, VPs are expected to be very succinct, direct, and to the point in all of their presentations with senior leaders. That is something I want to work on improving. Maybe I'm more verbose in my presentations. I get flustered. Well, what I would do is tell my manager, really want to make sure that I am direct, succinct, and able to develop this communication, these communication skills to advance in my career. It would be really helpful if you could provide feedback right after the meetings that we're in together where I present and let me know if you heard the central point or the concern that I was raising within the first 5 minutes. So what we're doing there is you've been clear that you want to advance in your career. You've identified a skill set that is needed in that position. And you've now engaged your manager in a very specific, direct way to provide feedback that will ultimately help you be better in your current role and start to position you for success in your future role.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm interested in your opinion on this. How early in your career should you consider hiring a coach? I think what a lot of people do is hire coaches when they're way down the road, and maybe they've got some bad habits, or maybe they're stuck in a hole and they need help out. But if you're a forward-thinking person for your career, when is the ideal time to hire a coach?
Well, I think you can get feedback and coaching from almost the moment that you walk in the door of a company if you're asking for it in a very specific, direct way and looking for opportunities within your organization to get that feedback and to get the coaching. And if you also want to engage an external coach, I don't think that there is a time frame. You know, you have to wait 5 years in your career before you engage a coach. A coach, in my mind, is an enabler of performance. The key piece in engaging a coach is knowing what your coaching agenda is. What do you want to work on? The other challenge, though, in coaching is the example that I gave around developing communication skills. I'm not in those meetings with you as your coach. You can tell me about it, but if I have a peer, a colleague, my manager, maybe a mentor who's providing that real-time feedback, that's going to create more sustainable behavior change that as a coach we can continue to work with and augment. But you've got to have, I believe, someone who can see the way you're interacting and operating in an organization and provide real-time feedback to change.
Yeah, it's interesting if you think of some companies, and I've often heard that the mentorship concept seems so natural, and the more we could do that, the more that we would develop and grow leaders. But in some organizations, that doesn't really work because, you know, some people are unwilling to give up their secrets or their secret sauce, so they're afraid someone's going to get ahead of them a little bit. And so you also have to drive a culture that accepts that and knows that's part of the company.
And part of elevating performance across the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You had mentioned before when you tried to resign and your boss wouldn't let you, as a great leader, and you just thought he was a wonderful leader. What is it about him and what was his style that you just thought was a great leader, and what did you learn from that?
So he was a great sales leader, and that he did three things really well. So he once a month would be in the field working alongside us, and he provided that specific real-time feedback. So right after a sales call, he would do a version of what I call a start, stop, continue. Here's what you need to start doing, stop doing, and continue doing, which allowed for real-time adjustment. So 15 minutes later, when we're in another sales meeting, all right, let's try it again. You've got that feedback. The second thing he did really well is he created a team culture where we were accountable for performance. We were expected to support each other's performance, recognizing that collectively we won as a team. And then the third thing he did really well is he insulated us from meetings, calls, emails, unnecessary busy work is my term for it, not his term for it, that detracted from what we were hired to do, which was to sell. And it made it much easier to do the other two things, give us feedback about performance and hold us accountable for that performance and supporting our others when we weren't getting bogged down.
Yeah, that's great. I'm also intrigued on how did you get connected with Harvard Business Review, and what are you doing for them?
Yes, so my first book that came out is called Work Simply. And in that book, I introduce an assessment that I developed in grad school and that we use in all of our coaching and coaching engagements and all of our productivity training programs. It's a cognitive assessment tool. And what it allows you to do is identify your work style or how you think and process information. And I think they saw an article I had written in another place, saw the book, and were very intrigued with the assessment and the concept because it's the only assessment tool like that in the market. And so connected with them and did a version of it for their readers and then kept contributing articles around our productivity style assessment, which is what it's called. And its impact on teams, how we think about work style as a marker of diversity, one of many that are required for high-performance teams, and then have continued to contribute over the years, pitching ideas around engagement and leadership to them.
Yeah, well, it's impressive. I commend you for being recognized by them and continuing to work with them. I think it's a good organization, and they put out good material.
Thank you. I agree.
We talk about this thing, for at least in the past, the big buzzword was the work-life balance. And, when people would ask me about that, I'd always just say, I don't really look at it that way. I have a life. And sometimes my work life is way out of balance. And sometimes what I do at home is out of balance. And I just kind of go through these cycles and, sometimes it's doing well and sometimes it's not due to what circumstances are up. So I guess my question is, can we design, our work to be and to meet both our professional and personal goals, or do you just have to kind of sacrifice one to excel in the other?
We can't achieve our personal and professional goals until we're very clear on what those are and what is required to achieve them. So for example, if I want to do my work within the company that I manage and write a book, those two objectives are going to require a certain input of time and energy, to your point, that I'm going to have to move from another place. So
what you're saying is, during that specific time, you're probably going to be out of balance. You're going to be your work balance is taking over at that point.
At that point. And there, for me, there was intentionality and choice around that and knowing how long it's going to last and the impact on my family. And the other thing I would point out is there are only 2 days in nature that are in perfect balance that we have. And I'm not sure balance is ultimately achievable, nor really always in alignment with the goals that we've set for ourselves.
So it could be just in a sense that it kind of might come back to the what's the purpose of my job, or what's fulfilling me in my job. Because, you know, if I'm loving what I'm doing and I'm hitting it on all cylinders and I'm having good success and getting recognized for what I do, I could be way out of balance, but that could be okay at that particular time.
Absolutely could. I think this work-life balance connects to how you define success for yourself, as well as how you define meaning and purpose. So meaning is constructed by you. It's an individual construction. It's how you make sense of the events that happen in your life. And success, in many ways, is also a construction that we make. Now, we would say culturally in the United States, there's some things that most people would say, this means you are successful, but not everybody aligns behind that rubric. So you've got to understand, how do you define success, or your professional and personal goals, and what is that meaning and purpose that you've defined for yourself?
And is it your opinion that a lot of people don't do that well? That's the piece that's missing. They're not defining success, and they don't maybe really know what they want.
I see a lot of folks that move through their days and life on autopilot and or operating off of the shoulds. I should do this, I should do that, and they're shoulding all over themselves. And so it's that clarity that precedes any type of construction of your life. What is it you want?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, because I think, at least in the past in corporate America, I mean, it was kind of conventional wisdom that if you want to get to a high level, you just work hard. You just have to work hard, and you have to keep doing mm-hmm. that. Is that changed? I mean, I'm not suggesting that you can't work hard and be successful, but maybe there's different ways to do that as opposed to just putting in that time.
Well, I would go back, Steve, to earlier in our conversation and say that it's a reorientation from output, which I think is hard work, more hours, I'm just going to do more, versus intentional impact. What is it that I do that drives revenue, ensures customer satisfaction, that creates a new product? That's something that's going to make an impact in your company. And the hope is that it is perceived as valuable, which I would suggest it is, which leads to additional opportunities for you within the organization.
So what when you get up in the morning, what's your biggest challenge? When you look at the day or the week, just personally, what is your biggest challenge?
Right now, it's making sure that my team is connected and that we're also bridging connections across their organization. So one thing that happened in the pandemic is that productivity increased in most companies. And one reason it did is there are two types of connections that we have. We have bonding connections and bridging connections. And so bonding connections are those connections you have on your team. And those strengthened during the pandemic. So I maybe saw your dog and we knew each other and we just came together and got the work done. But what broke down were those connections that I had with whomever in finance that I would see maybe in the office or talk to a couple of times. But we have these connections. And so what I'm thinking about and focused on in my company is, how do we continue these bridging connections with our vendor partners, with our contractors, making sure that those connections that did erode a little bit are strengthened, because those are important for innovation and ideation and helping us think past the status quo solutions to problems.
Yeah, and I think it's different personality types probably handled it differently. I mean, You know, you look at somebody who's extremely social and really likes that social part of being in the office and being around people and, you know, going to lunch with friends and meeting people after work for happy hour and so on. I think that person has probably really, really struggled during this pandemic because that just went away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's also important to remember that humans are social beings. We are literally hardwired to be social. Now, what that looks like is different across the spectrum, but all people have some level of social needs. And I do think that's a challenge for leaders. One, having conversations around this social well-being, social and emotional well-being, the recognition that it is different. And then how do you create opportunities for social, emotional well-being needs to be met within your team and within your organization, particularly in a remote or hybrid environment.
Yeah, and if we can agree that, you know, great teams are built on building relationships and knowing each other well and then interacting well together. So what advice do you give to your clients that want to improve on that, but now have to do it, over the phone or over Zoom? Is there a different strategy involved?
Yes. And there's the recognition that it takes a little bit longer to foster that trust. So if you have a new team member that joined during the pandemic and you've only interacted via Zoom, that's different than you and I have been working together for a few years and we had the benefit of that in person. So what we're saying and coaching folks on are two things. One is simple but can be challenging. One is shifting to the platinum rule from the golden rule. So the golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do to you. To the platinum rule, do unto others as they want to have done to them, which goes back to your example of the social folks, right? Who maybe have struggled more in the pandemic. And the second thing that we've been coaching on is now is a great opportunity because so much has changed to have conversations with each other and collectively with your team on, hey, we've all grown, changed. There's a lot that shifted. We're working in new ways. Let's talk about how we want to communicate with each other. What works well for you? What doesn't work well for you that you discovered? What do we need to do differently around collaboration and execution? And that having a conversation is really helpful because you might learn something and you've got a great opportunity to recreate. It's a new workplace. It's going to require some new workplace norms.
Yeah, and it also brings up the idea that, you know, I think one thing as business leaders, we just have to realize that everyone's just so exhausted right now. So when we go back to the productivity thing, it's not like, well, you know, this pandemic maybe is turning back a little bit, maybe toning down a little bit. And when that happens, then we can really get excited and get productive and really take this to the next level. But it's hard to do that if your people are already exhausted before you even have that thought.
It is exceedingly challenging. And so rest and recovery, mental, social, emotional well-being are vital for your team's continued long-term health and performance. So can you reorient to what do we want to let go of that didn't serve us well? And what do we want to take on that will serve us well as we move forward? So a very tactical thing that we coach all of our leaders on doing right now is look at the calendar and look at the meetings that are on your calendar with your team and do a meeting audit. And start with a paradigm shift of moving from let's meet to let's achieve. What's the purpose and objective of this meeting? Does it advance our goals? Is it a rehash of the last five meetings? Do we have the right people here to make a decision or provide the information that we need? Is it redundant? Just really critical look at the meetings to free up some time and space for your team.
And almost, in doing that, you're just, as we said earlier, maybe reaching a higher level of communicating.
You're
almost forced to, right? Because you need these parameters and know the expectations and set up the strategies that make sense. And that takes more communication than just showing up and sitting in a chair.
It absolutely does. And it takes an intentionality, which is going to change the way that you work and help you achieve all of these other outcomes that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just very, very interesting to see, and try and predict what's going to change. So are you of the belief that going forward, we'll be in this hybrid situation where it won't be, 5 days a week in the office, that there will be a lot more time at home?
I am. I do believe that is the future of work, that we will have a hybrid workplace. My hope is that there's intentionality behind it, that we use the workplace in person for the innovation, ideation, collaboration, the relationship building that is best done in person, because there are pieces that are best done in person. And that we also use the time not in the office for that heads down, solo, thoughtful work, and create a workplace that's intentionally aligned around the needs of our team members and the needs of the company.
I think it's really interesting because if you think about it, before the pandemic happened, there were people that maybe weren't in a fan of the flex schedule or working from home and whatever, because they thought the productivity would go way down when someone's at home. And it, from what you're saying, exactly the opposite happened. So now that when people are home, they're actually more productive, which causes issues. I think that's just an interesting thing that seems to have happened that was not predicted.
It wasn't predicted. And the pushback against remote work, particularly for segments of your organization that had certain roles, certain jobs, was that productivity would absolutely decline. The connection was productivity is only possible in a specific place. And productivity, space can enable and make the right behaviors more likely when it's well designed and well used. But it isn't the only predictor of whether or not I'm going to get my work done. And there are multiple examples of open floor plans, and really good research has been done that trust goes down in those environments, productivity goes down in those environments, communication goes down in those environments. So we have an opportunity in front of us to look at what are our goals, how do we achieve those goals, and how do we create a workplace that enables the achievement of those goals and not be tied to it has to be done a certain way. We can free ourselves to innovate to achieve outcomes.
Yeah. So are you optimistic about going forward that leaders are going to figure this out, or are we going to make a lot of missteps and it'll be messy for a while?
Well, I don't know about you, Sue, but I'm human and I'm learning and I make missteps every day, all day long. I know I'm making missteps, and my team and I've been doing this for years, and still there are opportunities for improvement on my own leadership journey. And I do think that for leaders, this is hard. It is hard. The workplace has changed. Your team members have changed. And it's not going to be easy, because we can't just go back to, quote, what was. We've got to start to create new.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Carson, usually at this point in the interview, I ask all my guests a common question. And that common question is, in relation to leadership, what is a pearl of wisdom that you could leave us with today?
Know thyself. I believe leadership takes radical self-awareness. And the more that you know who you are and where you might be telling your story or bringing an emotional trigger to a situation, the clearer you can lead.
And how is that self-discovery happen that you get to that point? How would you instruct clients to do that?
Mm-hmm. So the most powerful and simple way to do it is through reflection. So we coach our leaders 5-10 minutes at the end of the day to reflect on your interactions, your communications, what worked well, what didn't work well, feedback that you received. I think a coach can be very helpful. I'm also a strong proponent in assessments because assessments can be a great awareness tool. So you can do reflection up to a point, and then the level of awareness sometimes can abate, self-awareness can abate. So that's where having 360 feedback assessments where a coach can help you potentially see around corners or some blind spots that you can't see yourself.
Yeah, that's great. So another thing that I've been doing lately is sometimes I think of guests being on a podcast and you're anticipating what might be asked and what you might say. And so in the chance that I haven't asked you something you really wanted to share, is there anything I didn't ask you that you want to share with our guest today before we sign off?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and that's the question I always ask folks is, what did I not ask you that you thought I would ask or we didn't cover? And I don't have anything else to add in this conversation.
Okay. Well, great. Well, Carson, this has been a real pleasure. It sounds like you're doing great things, and I admire what you're doing. I really appreciate you jumping on today, and it seems like we have a lot to be optimistic about, and we keep going forward.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I do believe we have a lot to be optimistic about.
Okay. Have a great rest of your day, and take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.